You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hello, Bleeding Green Nation, and welcome back to another edition of Eye on the Enemy, powered by SB Nation and Bleeding Green Nation. I'm your host, John Stolness. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. Coming up, big episode of the podcast. Earlier this week, I talked to former Philadelphia Eagles legend DeSean Jackson, who's still trying to hook up with another team. I'll just play a brief snippet of my conversation with him because the whole interview can be found on the Bleeding Green Nation YouTube channel and also in a separate podcast that aired earlier in the week. But just I'll give you my favorite portion of the interview I did with DeSean earlier this week. Also, the 2022 Eagles schedule is out like every other Philadelphia Eagles podcaster in the world. I'm going to give you my rundown of wins and losses at this potential schedule. And I haven't looked at it. Like, I haven't gone through it yet. So it's going to be a real-time judgment on what I think their record is going to be. It's going to be like a first blush thing, so I haven't done any research on it. It'll just be a kind of first reaction, so I reserve the right to change my mind. But we'll do that coming up here in a few minutes. Also, I was on Washington Radio earlier today, Washington, D.C. Radio, talking about an article I wrote earlier this week for Bleeding Green Nation, ranking the 10 best players in the NFC East right now. And I'll give you, again, with the schedule, the five games I'm most looking forward to here this season. Lots to get to on this episode of Eye on the Enemy. So let's start off talking about the schedule. And I do think that this is a very I don't want to say if it's an easy schedule, but it certainly is one of the easier schedules in the NFL. I know you all have seen it by now, that according to strength of schedule, the Eagles, along with every other NFC East team, has the easiest schedule in the NFL. The Giants are 29th, followed by the Eagles at 30th, and Washington and Dallas are tied at 31st, 32nd. So, I mean, it's basically, you know, the Giants, the winning percentage of Giants teams that they're playing is 465. For the Eagles, it's 464. And for Washington and Dallas, it's 462. So, listen, it already is shaping up to be one of the easier schedules in the NFL. And there are some things about this schedule that really make you think optimistically about their chances of putting together a good record this year. The first part of the schedule leading up to the bye week, I think, is a real good opportunity for the Eagles to jump out to an over 500 record, and I'll detail that coming up here in just a second. The closing stretch also doesn't appear to be too hard. They do have, and you heard Brandon and Jimmy talk about it on BGN Radio a couple of days ago. They do have some challenges in there. Towards the end of the season, they finished up with three straight road games, which is not ideal, but then they finish up with two home games after that. But also, they have four road games this year in which they are playing on short rest, which is a distinct disadvantage from the home team that they'll be playing. And the home team will also be on short rest, but when you're the road team, certainly that is an issue. But I feel like this schedule overall is conducive to getting back to the playoffs, especially with another wild card in each league. So let's break down. And by now you all know the schedule, but I'll go through it here one by one, and I'm going to keep track of this as I go along. Week one, Sunday, September 11th at the Detroit Lions at 1 o'clock. The Eagles start on the road in the Motor City. I think the Lions are going to be a better team this year. I really do. They did outperform. I think they were 11-6 against the spread last year. So that tells you that they played a lot of really close games last season. Of course, when the Eagles played them, the Eagles blew their doors off, ran all over them with the rushing game. I think they ran for over 200 some odd yards in that one and were dominant. And it was really the worst loss of the Lions season. I think the Lions are going to want a little payback for that. I think Detroit is building a really nice culture up there in Michigan. But ultimately, I think that this is a I think that the Lions are a team that will build as the year goes along, and I don't necessarily think they're going to jump out to... this is a dangerous game. I don't think the Eagles are going to look past the Lions, but this is a dangerous game. I could very easily see a young Detroit team all hopped up surprising the Eagles and the NFL with a week one victory at home. I think it's a tough spot for the Eagles, but I'll give them a victory here in week one against the Lions, and so that takes them to 1-0. Then they play on Monday Night Football in week two in the home opener against Kirk Cousins and the Minnesota Vikings. For whatever reason, Kirk Cousins shrinks against every other team but the Eagles. He always plays well against the Eagles. And I really need to see the Eagles beat him before I feel good about picking them in this game. I don't like the idea of picking the Eagles to lose in the home opener on Monday Night Football, but I think the Vikings, without Mike Zimmer there, will be an improved team this year. They've got a really good offense. Dalvin Cook will probably be healthy in week two. He will not have suffered his injury by that point, his yearly injury that he normally does. And so I'm chalking this one up to be a loss. I think the Eagles are going to lose the home opener on Monday Night Football to the Minnesota Vikings, which takes us to week three. Sunday, September 25th. This is a game on short rest at Washington to take on Carson Wentz and the Commanders at 1 o'clock. This is a tough one for me because I do think the Commanders are going to be a little bit better this year. And I think the Eagles will split their two games against the Commanders. I don't think Carson Wentz is washed up. And it feels to me like I don't think Wentz is going to blow anybody's doors off in this particular game. But I think Washington might be more fired up to play this game than the Eagles will be. I think the Eagles are a better team, but and I know Eagles fans travel to Washington. This kind of feels like a loss to me, and I think that they're going to split. Maybe they win the road game here and they lose the home game, and maybe that's the more likely scenario. And I think maybe that's what I'll go with because I do think they're going to split. I'll say the Eagles win this game on the road in week three, but you know when we come down to the Washington Commanders at home on Sunday Night Football in week 10, you're probably not going to like my pick there because I don't think they're going to sweep. I don't think they're going to sweep the Commanders. So I'll say they win this road game, and I worry about. Well, we'll get to the home game here in just a second. But I have the Eagles at 2-1 after 3 weeks. Moving on to week four, Sunday, October 2nd at home against the Jacksonville Jaguars. The Eagles welcome Doug Peterson back to Lincoln Financial Field. Look, I think Doug Peterson's going to build a good team down in Jacksonville. The Jacksonville Jaguars have some nice pieces, but the Eagles are a better team. I think this is a game the Eagles will win rather comfortably. I'm not all that worried about the Jaguars. So I have the Eagles winning at home in week four, and I have them moving to 3-1 on the season. Week five, Sunday, October 9th at the Arizona Cardinals. It's a 4:25 start. The Eagles have trouble out in Arizona, and they don't generally play well out in the desert. The Cardinals are an interesting team. It's hard to know exactly what they are. It's hard to know exactly what Kyler Murray is. Now, DeAndre Hopkins will likely not play in this game. He's been suspended, and that could go a long way towards the Eagles being able to pull out a win out in Arizona. But I don't know. This doesn't feel like a victory to me. I think this is a place where Kyler Murray can make some things happen even without DeAndre Hopkins. I'm going to say week five against the Cardinals out in Arizona is a loss. So I have the Eagles at 3-2 after week five. And then week six, Sunday at home against the Dallas Cowboys on Sunday Night Football. I do think this is a spot the Eagles will win. I think they'll split their two games against Dallas as well. So I think they win the home game here on Sunday Night Football at home heading into the bye week. So I have the Eagles going 4-2 in their first six games before the bye week here. And I guess I got to, you know, well, I'll talk about this after we're done going over the entire schedule. But so you have the bye week here in week seven, which is a little bit early. It would be better if the bye week was a little bit later. Last year, it was perfect. And really, the Eagles got a lot of perks to their schedule last year, and they don't have quite the same advantage as far as, like, road traveling on short rest and all that kind of stuff, back-to-back-to-back home, road games and all that stuff. But in week eight, coming off the bye week, they host the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now, normally, you know, the Steelers come on your schedule, and you think, ugh, tough one. And look, Mike Tomlin is a really good head coach. He will have his team ready to play. I just don't know what the Steelers' quarterback situation is going to be at that point. Is it going to be Mitch Trubisky? Is it going to be Kenny Pickett? If it's Kenny Pickett, you know, I think against either quarterback, this feels like coming off a bye week at home against the Steelers team that probably one of the rare occasions they're going to finish under 500 this year. I think the Eagles will handle the Steelers. I think it actually will be a fairly close game. So I have the Eagles beating the Steelers in week 8 and moving to 5-2 on the season. And then on short rest, they have to travel to Houston to take on the Texans on Thursday night football. So again, a real short work week, but the Eagles have done pretty well in these spots in recent years, and it's the Houston Texans. I'm not at all worried about losing to the Houston Texans on a short week on Thursday night football. So I have week 9 as a victory also, and I have the Eagles at 6-2 at this point in the season. Now here's where it starts to get a little dicey for me. Week 10, at home, Carson Wentz returns to Lincoln Financial Field, Monday Night Football. I worry that the hype and the emotional toll of this game, I worry about the Eagles coming out flat in this one. I worry about Carson Wentz. I know he doesn't perform well in really big spots, but I feel like if he's still under center for Washington, I feel like this is the game I think they're going to lose. It feels to me like we're in for a disappointment as far as the Eagles beating Carson Wentz on their home turf, especially sitting at 6-2. I don't think they look past it. I think they're a little overly hyped for it. And we've seen situations like that before where a team is a little bit too emotionally charged up in a big game against an opponent they desperately want to beat. And you know that Washington is going to want to rally around Carson Wentz and play their best football for him in Philadelphia. So I'm going to say, this is a bummer, but I'm going to say the Eagles lose to the Commanders at home on this Monday night football game because it just feels like the most likely scenario to me. So I have the Eagles losing on Monday night against the Commanders. And I think this is where we hit a little bit of a lull in our season here. They go into, on a short week, they have to go to Indianapolis to take on Frank Reich and the Colts. You know, the Colts with Tim Ryan, the Colts with Matt Ryan, totally different guy. The Colts with Matt Ryan could be a very sneaky good team this year. That could be one of the better offseason acquisitions. And going on the road on short rest, again, feels like a tough spot for the Eagles. And I think the Eagles are going to drop 2 in a row here. I think they're going to go into Indianapolis. I think they're going to lose and fall to 6-4. And then you've got the Green Bay Packers on Sunday Night Football at home. Aaron Rodgers back at Lincoln Financial Field for just the third time in his career. Can you believe that? In all the years the Eagles have played the Green Bay Packers and have seen Aaron Rodgers, this is only the third time he will have started and played a game as the Packers quarterback in Lincoln Financial Field. And I think the Eagles lose their third straight here. I think they fall to 6-5 on the season, losing to the Green Bay Packers at home. So these are two primetime losses in 3 weeks, which is not going to be a lot of fun. A loss to the Commanders on Monday Night Football. I don't think talk radio is going to be a very fun place. We're going to be wondering what the heck is going on with this football team. After that, the schedule lightens up quite a bit. Now, the Tennessee Titans are really good, but I think the Eagles will go into Tennessee on Sunday, December 4th, against Ryan Tannehill and Derrick Henry, and I think that they will shut down the Titans. I think the Titans are going to take a little bit of a step back this year as well, especially without A.J. Brown there. It'll be a big game for A.J. going back to Tennessee to take on his former team, and I think the Eagles break their 3-game losing streak. I think they beat the Titans here on the road and move to 7-5. And then the Eagles go into New York to take on the Giants on Sunday, December 11th, another 1 o'clock start. I think the Eagles are going to sweep the Giants this year. I'm not at all worried about the New York Giants, and they'll move to 8-5 on the season with a victory in New York. And then they travel to Chicago to take on a Bears team at another 1 o'clock start, and I think the Eagles win that game too. And so I have the Eagles at 9-5 through week 15 with 3 straight victories over the Titans, Giants, and Bears. Now we come to the Christmas Eve game in Dallas at 4:25 Eastern time. I said I thought the Eagles would split the 2 games against the Cowboys. I think they'll go into Dallas on Christmas Eve, and I think this is the game they lose. It's, again, on short rest. and you're going down into Dallas, a very tough place. It's been a tough place for the Eagles to win in recent seasons. Jalen Hurts has had all kinds of trouble playing in Dallas. This is going to be a big game. It could be for the NFC East. I do think the Eagles will fall in this game and move to 9-6 on the season. Then the Eagles finish up with two more games, one against the New Orleans Saints at home in Week 17. I don't know exactly what the Saints are going to look like at this point. They're a tricky team for me to kind of diagnose, but I think the Eagles on New Year's Day, hosting the New Orleans Saints in the second to last week of the season, with the division possibly on the line, battling it out with the Cowboys, I think the Eagles move to 10-6 on the season with a victory there. And then either on Saturday, January 7th, or Sunday, January 8th, the Eagles will host the Giants at home. I think they win that game, and I have the Eagles finishing the season at 11-6. And I think that maybe that is a little bit optimistic. I don't know. This is the most primetime games the Eagles have had since 2018. Five scheduled primetime games. Going back to 2000, the Eagles have appeared in the second most primetime games in the NFL. 94 of them, only behind Dallas, who has appeared in 100 primetime games. When the Eagles start the season on the road against the Lions, it'll be their first ever game against the Lions on kickoff weekend. By the way, the Eagles will begin the season with an away game for the third straight year. It's their longest streak since 2011 to 2013. The Eagles-Cowboys have yet another Sunday night football matchup, as I mentioned, in Week 6. This is a game I expect the Eagles to win. And with the exception of a nationally televised 2014 Thanksgiving afternoon contest, the Eagles and Cowboys have met in primetime every year going back to the 2007 season. Now, the Eagles will not play two straight road games through the first 13 weeks of the season. So we mentioned that they play three straight road games towards the end of the season, but until that, they do not play back-to-back road games. So that is an advantage early in the season, and the Eagles will finish the year with back-to-back home games for the first time since 2017. So some notes there about the Eagles' schedule, and the five games I'm most looking forward to, obviously Week 3 in Washington against the Commanders, the first game against Carson Wentz. That's going to be a whole lot of fun. Sunday Night Football against the Cowboys in Week 6. Anytime you're facing off with the Cowboys on Sunday Night Football, especially at home, that's going to be a lot of fun. And it's before the bye week, so one of two things is going to happen. The Eagles are going to sail into 2 weeks riding the wings of a victory over a hated rival, or we're going to have to endure the frustration of a loss to the Cowboys on Sunday Night Football for an extra week. It all just goes with the territory for sure. Obviously, the one that everybody is waiting for is the Monday Night Football game in Week 10 against the Commanders with Carson Wentz coming back to Philadelphia. Will he play in that game? Will he be healthy in that game? We'll see. I have the Green Bay Packers as one of my most interesting games to watch. Anytime you get to see Aaron Rodgers come to Philadelphia, remember, it's a rarity. He'd only played in Philadelphia twice in 2010 and 2016. And again, I think the Eagles lose this game, but it should be a really outstanding late-season measuring stick for the Eagles. And then the other game is the Christmas Eve game against the Cowboys on Saturday in Week 16. Now, I mentioned that the Eagles closed the season with three straight road games. They're not the only team that's doing that. The Packers, Chiefs, and Dolphins are also doing that at various points this year. Did you know, and Pro Football Talk had this note, since 2018, teams with three straight road games are actually 11 games over 500, 22-11 in those games. So maybe it's not the disadvantage that most of us think it is. So that's my schedule. That's my prediction for the Eagles this year, 11-6, looking at the schedule at First Bluff. And I think the thing that I'm really interested in this year, and I would love to get your thoughts on this, so you can hit me up on my timeline with this, at John Stolness, and Commanders or Cowboys, which games are you more looking forward to this year? Does Carson Wentz coming back to the Commanders make them a more compelling team this year? I think it does. I think the Commanders are a more interesting matchup for the Eagles this year than the Dallas Cowboys simply because of Carson Wentz. I am looking forward and more anxiously anticipating these Commanders games against Carson Wentz than I am playing the Dallas Cowboys. Just because it's going to be so fascinating to see how it all plays out. And again, I think the Eagles will split these two games. I mentioned that a few minutes ago. But I think there's more juice around these Commanders games because the Commanders are going to be a better team this year. No matter what you think of Carson Wentz, he is better than what they had behind center last year. He's better than Taylor Heinicke. He has the capability to put together a good stretch of football. And he has the capability of still beating anyone. No matter what happened in Indianapolis at the end of the season last year, Carson Wentz does have the ability. If he plays within himself, if he plays within a system, and if he uses the players around him, he has the potential to be a good quarterback. But the mind is a tricky thing. How is he going to be mentally? And that's always been a big problem with Carson Wentz, that space between his ears, especially in big spots. How will he play against the Eagles? How will the Eagles play against him? What will the reaction be like? First of all, how many Eagles fans will be down in the nation's capital where I am here to give the Eagles a home field advantage on the road? Can you imagine Carson Wentz getting booed lustily in his own stadium? That can't be good. But then that primetime game on Monday Night Football, Carson Wentz coming back into Lincoln Financial Field, the vitriol, the week leading up to that game, it's going to be bigger than either of the Cowboys games this year. It just is. I mean, we're going to get up for the Cowboys games too because they are the Eagles' chief nemesis here in the division. But this year, the Commanders games have more juice. That's why they're two of the five for me. I only have one Cowboys game in my list of the five games I'm most interested in. These Commanders games are going to be absolutely fascinating, and they are the more interesting watch this season for Eagles fans. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'll go over my ranking of the 10 best players in the NFC East, another piece I did for Bleeding Green Nation this week. I was on Washington, D.C. radio talking about that, and they had an issue with me leaving one person off that, in retrospect, I probably would put him back on if I had the opportunity to do it again. Plus, I'll give you just a small snippet of my conversation with DeSean Jackson from earlier this week. We'll do that coming up next here on Eye on the Enemy.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries, not including...
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on, and there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It was always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again, and I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom. Mom, I'm going to the bathroom. I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, "Everything okay in there?" "Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog."
What's up, guys? I'm Evan Turner, co-host of the Point Forward podcast, alongside Andre Iguodala. We got a special series out now, all about our favorite NBA cities, the greatest places to travel, the evolving cultures and cuisines, and some of our most memorable experiences while we were on the road during our many years in the NBA. We talk about Miami, Chicago, New York, and many more. Tune in to Courts and Culture, the Point Forward travel guide, sponsored by Hennessy. You can find it on Point Forward Feed on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back with Eye on the Enemy. So let me give you my ranking of the 10 best players in the NFC East. I've been doing this every year for the last couple of years. It obviously changes every year. There's definitely more talent in this division than there was last year. And it was not easy to pare this down to 10 because how do you compare a wide receiver with an offensive tackle? How do you compare a running back with the defensive linemen? They play such different positions, and they are all of such different import that it's difficult to say this guy's a better player than this guy when they play very different positions. So this is an inexact science. Reading the comments, there are obviously a lot of disagreements. And when I went on 980 The Team in Washington this week, they were upset that I didn't have one of their Commanders in here that I think, as I look back and I looked at the statistics, probably should have been included in this top 10 list. But let me give you the top 10 list as it exists, as it lives on Bleeding Green Nation right now. Number 10 on my list, I was choosing between three different Eagles offensive linemen. I was choosing between Jason Kelce, who obviously is going to be a Hall of Famer after he retires and is probably the best center in the NFL, Lane Johnson, the best right tackle in the NFL, and left tackle Jordan Mailata. And I put Jordan Mailata on this list ahead of those two guys. And the reason I did that, both Lane Johnson and Mailata earned Pro Football Focus's All-Pro Second Team honors last year. Mailata has a slightly better PFF grade than Lane Johnson did, 86.9 to 82.4. Now, Jason Kelce was right in the middle at 84.8. But I thought, given the importance of left tackle, it's the most important spot on the offensive line. And Mailata allowed, usually you're facing the better edge rushers on that side of the line, and Mailata allowed just 20 total pressures last year and was also a terrific run blocker. Now, so is Jason Kelce, so is Lane Johnson. This is a toss-up. If you had one of those two guys ahead of Jordan Mailata here, I wouldn't argue with you. There's an argument for any of these three Philly offensive linemen here. No argument from me, but I have Jordan Mailata here at number 10. I figured I probably had to put a New York Giant on this list somewhere. Looking at their roster, it was not easy to find one. Saquon Barkley, I thought about, but he's underperformed in recent years, and he's kind of backsliding, and so I do not have Saquon Barkley on this list. Instead, I have defensive tackle Leonard Williams as the number 9 best player in the NFC East. He had 6.5 sacks as a defensive tackle, 2 forced fumbles, and 81 combined tackles. That's a really good defensive tackle. And I just wanted to have at least one Giant on this list. I probably, again, if I'm going to make the change that I mentioned just a second ago, I probably would just knock Leonard Williams off this list entirely and just say, sorry, Giants fans. Number 8, new Eagles edge rusher, hybrid defensive end, hybrid, Hassan Reddick. Reddick, obviously the Eagles' biggest free agent signing of the season. He's going to give Jonathan Gannon a lot of flexibility on defense, and he notched 12.5 sacks in 2020 and 11 sacks last year. He immediately becomes one of the most feared edge rushers in the East. There are some edge rushers in Washington that you could make the argument are better than Hassan Reddick, but both underperformed last year and both were hurt last year, which is why neither of them are on there, and I'll get to them in just a second. The one Commander defensive lineman I did put on this list, and I put him at number 7, is defensive tackle Jonathan Allen. I really think Chase Young is probably the best defensive lineman on Washington's roster, but, you know, again, he had the ACL tear. We don't know what his timetable is, and he underperformed. So did Montez Sweat last year. Meanwhile, Allen had a dominant season on the inside. He earned his first Pro Bowl nod and piled up 9 sacks and a staggering 30 quarterback hits from the middle of the Commanders' defensive line. He was the best defensive lineman on their team last year, and so he's the guy I have in the top 10. Here's maybe where it gets a little controversial for you. I have at number 6, new Eagles wide receiver A.J. Brown. And the debate in Philly right now is whether DeVonta Smith is the Eagles' number 1 receiver or whether it's A.J. Brown. And even though Smith's 2021 numbers were a little better than Brown's, Smith had 64 catches, Brown had 63. Smith had 916 receiving yards, Brown had 839, and both had 5 touchdowns. I think Brown's 2 Pro Bowl seasons prior and his overall skill set give him the slight edge over DeVonta Smith. I think you could make the argument Brown is the best wide receiver in the division. I know RJ Ochoa made that claim on the NFC East mixtape a couple of weeks ago, but I think he's slightly behind the guy who I have at number 5 on my list. I think CeeDee Lamb is the best wide receiver in the division right now. 79 catches last year, 1,102 yards and 6 touchdowns for the Cowboys. Now, Lamb is going to have to carry the load for Dallas because we don't know when Michael Gallup is going to return. And they lost Amari Cooper, so he's going to get a lot of targets, but that could also mean a lot of receptions and yards for the third-year receiver. Now, when I was on Washington radio this week, they argued, why not Terry McLaurin? Why is he not in the mix here? And if I could go back, I probably would remove Leonard Williams from this list and put Terry McLaurin on this list. He had better numbers than A.J. Brown last year, and the point was made, look who he had throwing him the ball last season. And they're right. Terry McLaurin had no one throwing him the ball last year. At least A.J. Brown had someone slightly competent in Ryan Tannehill, and of course CeeDee Lamb had Dak Prescott. So if I could do it over again, I probably would put Terry McLaurin on this list, and maybe I put McLaurin in between CeeDee Lamb and A.J. Brown somewhere on here. I think that's a faux pas on my part as I look back and I rethought it. Terry McLaurin, Scary Terry, probably should go on this list. I would knock out Leonard Williams, move everybody back, and probably put A.J. Brown at 7, McLaurin at 6, and CeeDee Lamb at number 5. But we can't do that. It lives on the internet forever, the way I had it before. All right, number 4 on this list, Dak Prescott, the only quarterback in the division I consider among the top 10 players. He had a great season last year, obviously, 37 touchdowns and 10 interceptions, with the second highest quarterback rating of his career, 104.2. Now, again, failed in the playoffs when it matters most, but as far as being one of the best players in the division, I think he's 4th best and far and away the best quarterback in the East. No, not Carson Wentz. No, not Jalen Hurts. Number 3, and a lot of people may think I have him too high, Darius Slay, Eagles cornerback. He only had 3 interceptions last year. I get it. And I have him above Trayvon Diggs. Diggs I do not have on this list at all, even though Diggs had a ton of interceptions last year. I think you look at a cornerback's value by how well he covers the guy he's supposed to face. And according to PFF, Darius Slay had the lowest passer rating allowed in single coverage last year at 25.4. When he wasn't getting help, when he was tasked with guarding a team's best wide receiver one-on-one, he allowed the lowest quarterback rating to that receiver in the NFL, 25.4. Russell Douglas, by the way, 3rd on that list at 37.8. But that's why I have Darius Slay on this list. He was amazing last year, but was quiet. It was a very quiet amazing. I think he's the best cornerback in the division, and I think he's number 3 on this list. Micah Parsons, Cowboys linebacker, I have at number 2, the AP Defensive Rookie of the Year and runner-up for Defensive Player of the Year. 13 sacks from the linebackers, 6th most in the NFL, added 64 solo tackles, 3 forced fumbles. Right now, he's the best overall defensive player in this division. And then the number 1 player, and I think he was my number 1 player last year also, was Zach Martin, the offensive guard for the Cowboys. Probably the best offensive lineman in football. And because there is no stud quarterback or even an upper echelon wide receiver or running back in this division right now, Martin earns the top spot over Micah Parsons. Now, honorable mention, again, Lane Johnson, Devontae Smith, Jason Kelsey for the Eagles, Terry McLaurin, Montez Sweat for the Commanders, DeMarcus Lawrence and Trayvon Diggs for the Cowboys, and Saquon Barkley and Andrew Thomas for the Giants earned honorable mention for my top 10 best players in the NFC East right now as we start, right before we get started here in the summer. All right, before we wrap up, I want to just give you a little snippet of my interview with DeSean Jackson. Again, you can hear the whole thing, you can watch the whole thing on the Bleeding Green Nation YouTube channel if you haven't done that yet. You'll have to look at my face, so I apologize for that. If you don't want to do that, you can listen to the podcast version of it, which again is on the Bleeding Green Nation podcast feed, came out a couple of days ago. But we got to talking about DeSean Jackson's time in Philadelphia and asked him to reminisce on what I thought. I asked him, you know, what's the best team you ever played on here in Philadelphia? Give it a listen.
I mean, when I first came in there, honestly, I think like my rookie year, like my first few years, man, when I came in, you know, we had Donovan, we had Brian Westbrook, Brian Dawkins, Asante Samuel. You know, I look at that era, you know, Trent Cole, Jaquay Parkers, Mike Patterson. Like, you know, I look at that era. I think them few years was top notch, but I think, you know, the best production year I think was 2013 when Chip Kelly came in there. That one year we had with him, even though some things I disliked that he did, but you know, obviously as far as on the field and what we did, I think, you know, that was one of my best years. You know, the year with Michael Vick, man, being that quarterback, you know, he was an idol of mine growing up, you know, and to be able to play with him, man. Yeah, I think, yeah, that year when we had McCoy, you know, McCoy is a great friend of mine. I'm actually seeing him tonight. You know, but yeah, Jeremy Maclin, McCoy, you know, we had a squad, man, and that squad was very special, man. We did some dope things there.
It would have been great to see what you guys could have done if you hadn't.
If he didn't mess up our team, right?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, he definitely changed around. But you know, things happen, man, and you gotta live with what happens. You know, people in charge make decisions, and that's what you gotta live with.
You know, you could tell he's got feelings about Chip Kelly, and we all have feelings about Chip Kelly, and you do wonder. Would Chip Kelly, the butterfly effect, right? What if Chip Kelly doesn't get rid of LeSean McCoy and DeSean Jackson? Do they get to a Super Bowl? Does Chip Kelly stay longer? Does Doug Peterson never get hired? Do the Eagles never win a Super Bowl with Doug Peterson and Carson Wentz? Does Mike Vick hang on longer? Like, there's so many unanswered questions. If Chip Kelly's tenure in Philadelphia had been more successful, and I think the whole reason it wasn't was because he got rid of DeSean Jackson and LeSean McCoy for no good reason whatsoever. And I think DeSean probably wonders that too. DeSean never played in a Super Bowl. He got close in the NFC Championship game in 2008, his rookie season, as you heard him say. But that's as close as he ever got. And I really do wonder if Chip Kelly would have been successful had he kept those two stars on his team instead of getting rid of them for no good reason whatsoever. It's a fascinating question. And, you know, we won a Super Bowl with Doug Peterson and a different roster, so it all worked out in the end for us. But for DeSean, it's got to be a little bitter to know that they had a great team there. And really, the coach self-sabotaged himself and now is just an afterthought in the football world. All right, folks, that's going to do it for this edition of Eye on the Enemy. My thanks to DeSean Jackson for coming on with us earlier this week. We've got the schedule stuff for you covered fully. If you haven't caught Jimmy and Brandon's schedule analysis on BGN Radio, I want to make sure to point you in that direction and listen to that. Some good insight there as well. Check out all of our coverage on bleedinggreennation.com too. We're keeping you up to date on all of the latest news and rumors and insight into the upcoming 2022 season. Thanks everybody for tuning in. I'll talk to you next time here on Eye on the Enemy.